Good mornings, I'm Chris Oakes, and coming up today, in the event of an emergency, what would you do with a family pet? A new survey shows many people recognize the importance of having a plan, but very few actually have one. Also this morning, a case study in sustainable agriculture, how farmers are using technology in innovative ways to produce the food we need while protecting the planet we also need. The Trojans fell in an epic shootout last week and now face arch rival Fremont Ross on homecoming night. We get our weekly high school football preview and another collection of warm and comfy fall recipes from Kyra's Kitchen. This is the Good Mornings Podcast Edition for Friday, September 20th, 2024. Big news here. Among the first things you need to know, the most interesting and buzzworthy stories of the day, this, I don't know how this is not the lead story in every newscast today. Earth is getting a second moon. Now that seems like that would be a major story. You know, that should be the lead, I would think. Earth getting a second moon. This is just not something that you see every day. Apparently, a bus-sized asteroid will begin orbiting the Earth later this month and will travel in a horseshoe pattern without fully circumnavigating our planet. I don't know how that works, but that's what it says. Dubbed Asteroid 2024, it will, because, you know, moon was taken. They can't call it moon because that's already been taken. It will orbit Earth only until November 25th. So it is only a temporary second moon, but it is technically a second moon because it will be in Earth's orbit. After that, after November 25th, it is expected to be pulled back toward the sun and eventually it will return to its home in an asteroid belt. So it's just a moon visitor to Earth. Scientists say the object is too small for typical, you're just not going to be able to see it with the naked eye. And apparently even amateur telescopes or binoculars, no. So this is going to be hard to see. I guess that's why it's not the lead, because, you know, it's not going to be, you know, a second huge moon like the moon we typically think of, but it will be, in fact, a second moon. So that just seems like a big score, big story. It just seems like it should be a big story. This is another one of these stories here. Among the first things that you need to know, the most interesting and buzzworthy stories of the day, this is another one that seems like it should get more play than it is in the news. A new survey which finds it's 1,000 young adults were surveyed, Gen Zers, young adults, 47% say they wish that TikTok had never been invented. And although 52%, so a majority, say that social media has benefited them, it is a good thing, they say, overall. 29% now say that social media has hurt their lives. It has made their lives worse. And it appears that the plurality blamed TikTok more than anything. It's 47% say that they wish TikTok was never invented. Respondents did not seem to feel negatively toward YouTube or messaging apps or things like that. So it is their anger specifically focused on social media. Gen Z, according to psychologist Jonathan Haidt, commenting on the survey, Gen Z does not heavily regret the basic communication, storytelling, and information-seeking functions of the internet. But they do believe 69% of respondents in the survey say they would support laws requiring social media companies to develop child-safe options for their youngest users. And again, these are young adults. These aren't the old fuddy-duddies who just don't get it. This is young adults that have grown up really with social media and understand the benefits, but also the risks. So I thought it was very interesting. It doesn't say who commissioned that survey, but it was interesting nonetheless. Let's see. Shohei Ohtani. Did you hear this story? Apparently, the Los Angeles Dodgers phenom joined a very exclusive club in Major League Baseball history yesterday, becoming the very first player, and this was amazing to me when I heard this, the very first player to join the 50-50 club, meaning 50 home runs and 50 stolen bases in the same season. Very first Major League Baseball player ever to accomplish that feat. And when I heard that, I thought, that is amazing. Not so much that he accomplished that feat, because Shohei Ohtani is just a freak of nature. If you follow baseball at all, you know that. What really amazed me and made my jaw drop when I heard that story is that really there's no other Major League Baseball in the entire history of professional baseball, of Major League Baseball, there has never, ever been a player to hit 50 home runs and steal 50 bases. I just found that I was incredulous when I heard that. Apparently, there have been other players that have done 40 and 40, 40 home runs, 40 stolen bases, but nobody has ever reached the 50-50 mark. And that just amazed me. That blew my mind. That's one of those statistics, when you hear it, you almost want to go and see if you can look it up and verify that, because it just doesn't seem possible. Actually, last night in the Dodgers win over... who did they play last night? I don't remember. Anyway, Miami. They were playing Miami. He actually hit 3 home runs in the game last night. 3 home runs. So that is just... he is a freak of nature. But I just... that was an amazing statistic that I had trouble believing, but apparently that is the case. Couple of other items here among the first things that you need to know. The most interesting and buzzworthy stories to get your Friday morning started. How much money would you have in order to be happy with your net worth? How much money would it take? And we're talking about liquid assets. A new survey by CardRates of 800 Americans found that 56% of us would be happy with a liquid net worth of $200,000. Now, important to note that a liquid net worth includes all of the cash you have on hand, plus anything you have that can be easily converted into cash. So savings, savings bonds, money market certificates, you know, that kind of thing. It doesn't include like investments in retirement accounts. It doesn't include real estate. So liquid net worth, $200,000 is the magic number, and 56% of us would be happy with that. Gen Zers, again, those young adults, seem more interested in increasing their net worth than millennials, and women tend to be more content with less money than are men, according to the survey. Women tend to say that they would be content with a liquid net worth of about $100,000. So it wouldn't take as much for women to be content. And how much you make, how much your salary is, also contributes to how happy you are with, you know, the amount that you would have on hand. 66%, two-thirds of those who earn $40,000 a year would be happy with $100,000. But 61% of those who have a salary of $150,000 say no, it would take more than 200, which makes sense. If you are annually making 150,000, then having 200,000 on hand would really seem probably like peanuts. But for the rest of us who make a more modest income, have $200,000 on hand, that would be pretty good. So, kind of interesting. Kind of interesting. And we mentioned a little bit earlier, one of the things that we're going to talk about this morning on the program, in fact, it is our cover story coming up here just a little bit later on, has to do with preparing an emergency plan for our pets. If there would be a natural disaster or some other emergency, what would happen to the family pet? What would you do with Fido or Fluffy? A new survey finds that many people recognize it's important to have a plan, but very few people actually have a plan. So we're going to talk about that and some of the things you need to do take in mind. But I thought in conjunction with that, along those same lines, this story actually popped up on the Newswire this morning, and I thought, well, it's very timely, so I'll bring it up. What happens to the family pet when a couple breaks up? Some pet owners, this apparently is becoming a growing thing, some pet owners are signing pet prenups. They call them pet nups. Prenuptial agreements of what happens with the pets if the couple, you know, if it doesn't work out. To decide who gets custody in the event of a breakup. Laws can vary by location. In Spain, incidentally, the piece here points out, pets are classified as sentient beings, and partners can share custody just like parents can share custody of human children. So they're on that same level. That is in Spain. Other jurisdictions see a pet simply as property. So it is determined who gets the pet, just like who gets the car, who gets the house, that kind of thing. If you are planning on adopting a pet with a partner, the story goes on to say, you might want to draft a pet nup to decide what happens if it doesn't work out. I think that's actually good advice, especially because a lot of people, you know, couples before they get married, before they have kids, will adopt a pet even before they're married. And so if it doesn't work out, probably a good idea to be clear going in as to the arrangements for caring for that pet. If you know what I'm talking about. Don't want to be on doom and gloom and negative about that, but you get the idea. There you go. Some of the most interesting and buzzworthy stories to get your Friday morning started.
WFIN News, I'm Matt Demchek. Your WTOL 11 weather, partly to mostly sunny today with a high in the upper 80s, partly cloudy tonight, a low in the mid-60s. The suspect in a shooting outside a Finley bar has been indicted by a Hancock County grand jury. Court records show the 39-year-old is facing charges of attempted murder, felonious assault, having a weapon against a court order, and tampering with evidence. Police say the shooting happened on September 13th outside Old Stony Ledge on Howard Street. Officers say they chased the suspect through some yards before taking him into custody. The victim suffered a gunshot wound to his face and was taken to Blanchard Valley Hospital by private vehicle and then flown by Life Flight to OSU Hospital for further treatment. Get more details in this story on our website. The mayor of Springfield, Ohio, has issued a formal safety proclamation granting the mayor temporary emergency powers to mitigate public safety concerns.
City officials say the proclamation will stay in effect until they determine it is safe to lift it. This comes after last week's presidential debate, during which former President Donald Trump falsely accused members of Springfield's Haitian community of abducting and eating pets. The accusations were amplified by his running mate, Ohio Senator J.D. Vance, and other politicians.
ONN's Kate Burdett reporting. Officials say crews will be doing some work on the Bright Road Bridge over the Blanchard River a little north of the intersection of State Route 568 beginning on Monday. The project will involve shifting traffic to adjoining lanes and lane closures during the repairs. The bridge will remain open to traffic. However, it is recommended that drivers find alternate routes to avoid possible delays. The project is expected to last about 2 weeks, weather permitting. Get more details in this story on our website. This has been Homecoming Week in Findlay City Schools, and the Homecoming Parade will be held today at 5:30. The Homecoming football game will kick off at 7 o'clock. And just before kickoff will be the crowning of the Queen and King. Get more details in the story on our website. Remember, you can always get more news online at WFIN.com. Matt Demchek for 1330 WFIN and 95.5 FM.
Well, according to a new survey, 8 in 10 Americans feel that it is important to have a disaster preparedness plan for their pet. But just one-third actually have one. So we're going to try to address that disparity this morning with Dr. Rebecca Tremble. She is a veterinarian at Hill's Pet Nutrition, which commissioned the survey that we mentioned. And also Dr. Roberta Westbrook, Chief Animal Welfare and Medical Officer at the Houston SPCA. Dr. Tremble, let me start with you. First of all, why is it important for people to have a disaster preparedness plan in place for their pet? Talk about the importance of this here.
Sure. The bond between people and their pets is really undeniable. So we're often not thinking about what to do in an emergency with our pets. Already in 2024, we've seen multiple disasters across the entire country. So it's important to remember to make those emergency preparedness plans and to include our pets. September is National Preparedness Month, and Hill's Pet Nutrition is teaming up with our longtime shelter partner, the Houston SPCA, to help provide resources and awareness around emergency plans, including your pets.
So, Dr. Westbrook, one of the things that we often hear when we're talking about disaster preparedness for our families is to prepare an emergency kit. And you say it's just the same for your pets. You should have a pet emergency kit.
Yes, that's exactly right. We want to have a pet emergency kit as well.
What would that include?
Items should include things in two categories, essential items and comfort items. So for essential items, we want to first have at least a 3-day supply of both food and water available for our pets. This way, they always have proper hydration and adequate nutrition as they're traveling and trying to get to a safe location. Then second, you want to make sure that you plan ahead and contact your family veterinarian and make sure that you refill any critical medications that your pet may be taking so that you can ensure there's no interruption in their treatment and they can stay healthy. Then, as you're traveling, making sure that you have a way to keep control of your pet and keep them close to you is also going to be critical. So make sure your pet has a properly fitting harness, collar, and leash available. And in the event that you're unable to allow your pet to walk by your side, having a travel carrier is also a good item to include in your emergency kit. And then, unfortunately, during times of emergency, it's possible that your pet could incur injuries unexpectedly. So having a first aid kit available is also important. In that first aid kit, you may include gauze, bandaging materials, antibacterial cleansing solutions, and maybe cotton-tipped applicators. Your local veterinarian and your local animal shelter can help you get that put together. And if you have a cat, things like cat litter can also be important. For those comfort items, you want to have your pet's favorite toys, blankets, and maybe even their favorite treats so that they can have some creature comfort as you go through this difficult time.
Such an important consideration there in terms of the comfort items, because the pets, as we know, animals thrive on routine. And if there is anything that can disrupt a regular routine, it is an emergency or a disaster, that they just don't understand. And so, obviously that's going to be critical. So we've got the kit. Then what? Let me throw this out to both of you. What other tips, what other considerations should we keep in mind when planning for a disaster or an emergency in order to keep our pets safe?
Sure. So another critical thing to do is have your pet microchipped, if not already, and keep your contact information up to date with the microchip organization. The study that you had mentioned that also included Talker Research noted that less than half of pet parents actually have their dogs and cats microchipped. So you can work with your local veterinarian or your local shelter. Often they will also provide this microchip service for a small fee. And then reminder again to keep that information up to date. This may be the difference of reuniting with your pet if you're separated during an emergency.
I'd also like to add that keep some updated photos of your pet available so that any event you do get separated, you'll always have photos of your pet to provide to members of the community to help get you reunited. It's also very helpful to plan ahead and find locations of lodging that allow pets. This could be a friend or family member's home, or it could be a hotel. But you want to make sure that pets are welcome so that you don't have to separate from your pet.
Also a very important consideration because, yeah, they can't always go where we go. So we definitely want to prepare for that in advance. Also want to give you the chance to kind of plug and promote the work that you are doing. As you mentioned, over the past decade or so, Hills Disaster Relief Network has supported shelter partners like the Houston SPCA directly responding to families in crisis. Talk about that work.
Thank you. I'm proud to say that over the last decade, Hills has donated more than 3.9 million pounds of food to organizations responding to those in need after a disaster. But we didn't just stop there. Additionally, Hills has provided over 1.5 million pounds of food to area food pantries that help during disaster, as well as can provide free nutrition if a family is experiencing pet food insecurity.
Yes, we're so grateful for Hills Pet Nutrition for partnering with us during times of disaster, such as during COVID-19 and Hurricane Ida, and even Hurricane Harvey, when we took in more than 2,300 dogs and cats. And Hills helped us to provide 120 tons of food and other very important supplies to provide to those pets in need.
Wow, you hear some of those numbers and it just underscores the importance of what we're talking about. Like we said, 8 in 10 Americans feel that it is important to have a preparedness plan for their pets, but very few of us, only about one third, actually have one. So maybe now is the time to actually get that done. And Dr. Tremble, where do we get some more information, more resources, more kind of helpful guidance on this?
Sure, you can visit hillspet.com/prepareyourpet.
Ladies, thank you both for taking the time this morning. We appreciate it.
Thank you for having us.
You know, modern technology is an amazing thing. Yeah, there's no question that we can, you know, nitpick about some of the less appealing aspects. Maybe we've come to rely on it too much. Maybe we get too wrapped up in our technology sometimes, but the convenience and the efficiency that it allows us in our lives is something that is something that we truly marvel at. I mean, you really think about it. We have smartphones, we have smart homes, and smart farms, where cutting-edge technology is used to grow our food and protect the land at the same time. This week, the Ohio State University College of Food, Agriculture, and Environmental Services held their annual Farm Science Review, which is a showcase of advancements in science and technology of interest to the ag community. And in that spirit, this is not part of the Farm Science Review, but it's kind of along the same lines. We are joined this morning from a farm outside of Amarillo, Texas, by Callie Howard and Nicole Spurlock. And ladies, we have heard this term, sustainable agriculture. What does that mean to you?
So when you're talking about sustainable agriculture, to Nicole and I, that means continuing to farm. And we need to use our resources, our time, and our consumers' time and resources in a responsible way. We want our farms to stay around just as bad as the consumers do.
And we talk about using technology to help do that. How are farms such as yours utilizing the same kind of smart technology that we may be familiar with in other, aspects of our lives to grow the food that we eat to aid in your livelihood?
You know, there's so many different ways that we utilize technology on the farms. I know that one hot topic that we've discussed as farmers over the past few years is GPS technologies, right? And how all the machines run on GPS and everything's mapped out. And that just makes things so much more efficient. But another way that is not talked about day to day and is a big practice in our area for farms that are technologically advanced, if you will, is for operating and observing and maintaining our irrigation systems. So it doesn't rain a whole lot. And in order to be able to do what we do and supply the food that consumers around the world need, we need to be able to irrigate. But we want to be really responsible and careful about that and when we do and how much we do it. So utilizing the data that we have on our smartphones that are connected to what we call the sprinkler system or pivots is essential. We can even turn them off and on from our phones, and that just makes things so much easier and makes us better stewards of our land as well.
So kind of like what people may do with their lawn sprinklers now, but you just do it on exactly. a much, much larger scale, I would imagine. So help us out, because again, in this area, we don't see as when we see some irrigation, but not certainly as much as what you have out there. So how is this different from the way this was done a generation ago?
So I personally grew up on a farm, and I have watched these technologies come into play. We used, in our part of the world, we used to row water crop, and you would basically have an irrigation system with a pipe that starts at the first of the field and waters till the end of the field, running in little mini ditches in between all of the crops. Now, it's a totally different ball game. We are using irrigation systems in a pivot circle that have dropped down from the top of a large mechanical system that spray water directly to the ground, and it saves incredible amounts of water. We get so technical as to changing the nozzles out during different times of the year so the water droplet size can apply to the crop in the best way to save even more water.
As opposed to just blanketing the fields, you're able to really target the areas that need it and the way that they need it when they need it.
Exactly. It's like a fine mist sprayer versus a water cannon.
Wow. Now, something else, and I want to mention this because people may be familiar with something called the Natural Resources Conservation Service, or NRCS. I'm sure lots of people have heard that term before. For the benefit of those who are not familiar with the agriculture industry, what is that, and how are programs and services like the NRCS helping farmers such as yourselves adopt these smarter and more sustainable practices?
You know, the NRCS is just an essential organization that can assist farmers with so many things. But one thing that comes to the top of my mind is the EQIP program. You know, we've talked all about irrigation, so I'm going to kind of stay on that same note. You can't be a tech-savvy farm if you don't have the proper equipment to be tech-savvy with, right? So if you want to be one of these conserving farmers, if you want to have all the data, if you want to be able to turn off your pivot system from your smartphone, well, you've got to update the technology that is on your farm. And so the EQIP program can literally equip farmers to have that equipment, not to be so cheesy about it, but it equips them financially to be able to make those huge purchases on our farms, because we're not talking about one sprinkler system. We're usually talking about several.
Right.
And that can just be a huge cost, you know, to their farms. And it could be a bad year. Let's say their irrigation is bad, you know, so that might be really financially not feasible. But if they had a little bit of a boost and had that assistance, they could bring things up to date and in doing so, become better farmers.
You also talk about the importance of empowering individual farmers, individual farms, with making their own decisions when it comes to managing their land. And here we get into you know, some interesting topics and some interesting discussions, because it seems like everyone has an opinion as to how farming should be done. But you point out that it is not a one size fits all kind of proposition.
You're correct. So Nicole and I live approximately 40 miles apart, and most of the practices that we use are generally the same, but things like soil type come into play. And Nicole's soil is much different than our soil on our farm. So when we go in to decide how to take care of our land in the best way, this is just a great example of how technical and how every farm is different. We can't apply the same approach to every farm to make decisions for the land, because the land varies so much.
At the same time, you get into the question of, you know, how do you set standards, or how do you set sort of baselines when there are so many variables that have to be taken into account?
I really think, you know, that's about getting to know farmers, getting to know our practices, and trusting that farmers want to do the best job they can, not only for the consumer, but for the sake of their own families and for generations to come. We want to be good stewards of our lands. We want to be fair to all consumers. And we, in knowing that, are making great decisions, and we want to be able to make those decisions for ourselves.
It is a fair point, and it's been made before, that it certainly makes sense that farmers, ag producers, want to take care of their land because their land is their livelihood. So it is certainly a point worth keeping in mind. Again, Kelly Howard, Nicole Spurlock with us from outside of Amarillo, Texas, talking about sustainable agriculture in the 21st century. Where do we get more information?
Yes, you can go to watergrows.org, or if you're more of a social media person, you can follow them at watergrows across most platforms to see how farmers across America are using our resources and growing your food.
Ladies, thanks very much for taking the time this morning. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
Kickoff time tonight. We're talking about temperatures in the middle 80s, so a little toasty for the players out there on the field, especially those that are on those turf fields with all of the sunshine through the course of the day. It's going to be a little warm. It'll be down around 80 at halftime and into the upper 70s by the end of the game. It is another Football Friday. The Trojans fell in an epic shootout last week, and now will face arch rival Fremont Ross on homecoming night. Earlier this week on the Coach's Corner, host John Marshall spoke with Findlay head coach Stephen Adams.
There was just something about Clay last week that you just didn't seem to get the stop when you needed it.
Yeah, they did a great job of coming out, you know, which we kind of expected and knew. They punched early, they punched often, and you know, had us playing behind for a little while there.
Your quarterback, Landon Eckleberry, a freshman, as we've discussed, but he was dynamite. 29 for 42, 562 yards. That sets a school record for a single game passing. He also connected for 5 touchdown passes. You might have expected to see those numbers this year, but maybe not from him, maybe from Ryan Montgomery. But the new guy really making things happen.
Yeah, the game, you know, called for him to try to help us claw back into that game. And you know, he threw some passes that were on the money, did a great job of being composed in the pocket, way mature in the pocket as a freshman than we could have ever envisioned. Got the ball to our playmakers, and those weren't just kind of our typical screen game or typical, you know, short passes that we hit. A couple of those were some deep passes that were able to go for first downs and some explosive plays. He did a great job, and you know what, 70% completion percentage. Thought he did a great job. You know, hats off to him, hats off to the offensive line for allowing him that time to be able to make those plays.
Offensive record set, but the bottom line is you come home with the loss and a 1-3 record after that game. This week is homecoming. It's Fremont Ross, so everybody is going to turn things up to 11.
Yeah, so many things, right? Like so many storylines coming into this week. Both teams 1-3. Both teams maybe trying to find a way to scratch and claw for a win to gain some confidence in some aspects as a whole unit. It's a rivalry game, so the records do really go out the window. We've had some heart attack games the last so many years, and you know, I really don't see that changing, you know, with kind of how the rivalry has gone. So, no, we know that we need to generate some stops on defense, and I think hopefully the guys know they're tired of hearing about it, and you know it's going to be something that's going to be talked about until we can get it fixed. And a big part of that is just going out there and playing with extreme confidence, and you know really laying your pads on people, and you know being able to wrap up and take them down. Some of it's physics, understanding we can't just put our arms out and hope somebody falls. You know, nobody's that strong against force. So the defense is excited. They understand it's a challenge, and I think they've been excited, and I've been proud at the way they've always responded and come back week by week after some tough moments, ready for the next thing.
Both teams 1-3 going into this one. Their losses to Whitmer, Perrysburg, Tiffin, Columbian in their three games, they've scored no more than 21 points. This is going to be a test for your Trojan defense to see if you can hold them to a reasonable number and allow the offense to make things happen. Is there a significant key to all of that?
Yeah, I think it's you always go back as a coach. You're going to look back and figure out what's going on, figure out why. You know, is our scheme fitting our kids the most? Are kids in the right positions? Are the errors that we're making, are they physical? Are they mental? Maybe we just didn't execute at a high level, right? And then you try to put all those answers together and come out with, okay, well, then with what we just kind of discovered here, what do we need to do to change this and help the kids out? Because that's what coaching's about, right? Like, you don't blame it on kids. You blame it on, you take it on yourself to figure out how do I help them have confidence, because we got to get those guys to go out there and execute at a high level. And I know that they're capable of that, and we got to meet that capability gap. It's a special week, and I think they're excited to go out there and continue to change the thought process on the Finley Trojans this year.
John Marshall with Finley head coach Stephen Adams previewing tonight's matchup with the Little Giants of Fremont Ross. Homecoming night at Donnell Stadium tonight. Our coverage begins with Tonight in High School Football at 6:10 right here on 1330 WFIN, WFIN.com, and 95.5 FM. Other high school football action across our family of stations tonight. It's BVC action, Riverdale at Van Buren on our sister station, 100.5 WKXA and WKXA.com. And in the Western Buckeye League, Ottawa Glendorf travels to St. Mary's. Titan football on 106.3 The Fox tonight and 106.3thefox.com. And of course, you can follow all of the area action live and in real time all evening long on the WFIN scoreboard page powered by ScoreStream and presented by Owens Community College. We've got the link up to the scoreboard page at our website at goodmornings.net.
This is Good Mornings with Chris Oakes on 1330 WFIN, WFIN.com, and 95.5 FM.
We interrupt this program to bring you a broken news alert.
Sometimes you don't have to go very far to find the broken news, and I love a story with a healthy dose of irony. A ladder truck belonging to the fire department in Lakeview, Ohio, Logan County, recently was severely damaged in a fire. The fire truck. But not at a fire that the department was battling. They weren't battling a blaze or, you know, wasn't any kind of heroic, noble thing where the fire truck got damaged. No, the ladder truck was parked outside of a warehouse where the engine was waiting for repairs. It was in the shop for repairs, and emergency responders arrived to find the fire truck with extensive fire damage. Fortunately, the story says, the fire had self-extinguished before other fire crews arrived from a different department. No additional firefighting efforts were needed, so the fire truck actually, I guess, put its own fire out, as it turns out. No other vehicles involved. No one was injured. The Ohio Fire Marshal is investigating the cause of the blaze, but they say it does not appear to be a criminal matter, so I don't know if it just spontaneously combusted. Maybe that's what it was in for repairs for. I don't know. But everybody is okay, except for the fire truck. Let's see. Elsewhere, more law enforcement fun in Los Angeles. A police officer is accused of using camera-equipped smart glasses to help fellow officers cheat on a promotional exam. police officer cheating on an exam for a promotion in the department. That's not a good look. I mean, let's just be frank about it. It's not a good look. The officer, it says, is under investigation after allegedly recording the questions on a sergeant's exam earlier this year with his camera-equipped smart glasses. On Wednesday, the LAPD confirmed it has secured search warrants for multiple officers' city-owned and personal electronic devices. The exam ended up being taken by about 1,600 LAPD officers in hopes of being included on a promotional list to make sergeant. As to how many got the answers to the exam from this officer, it is unclear. So, yeah, not a good look. Not good look. From the international files, matter of fact, the rest of the stories that we have here in today's broken news actually come from the international file. This from Syria, where a man recently found out that his chronic runny nose, which he had just written off as a cold. You know, you have a cold, you have a runny nose. No, it wasn't a cold. He was actually, it was actually fluid leaking from his brain. That's not good. He's 20 years old. The man started experiencing his runny nose as well as headaches and even seizures 6 years earlier after sustaining a head injury in a car accident. After developing complications, he was admitted to the hospital and placed in the intensive care unit where an MRI revealed a fracture in his skull and a condition in which the tissue covering the brain protrudes through the openings in the skull, and thus this had developed in the nasal cavity, and he was leaking brain fluid through his nose. I will never look at a runny nose the same way again. Fortunately, the story has a happy ending after undergoing surgery to put everything back in its proper place. The man is back home, and the headaches, the seizures, and the runny nose have gone away. So, does have a happy ending there. But that's crazy. That's beyond crazy. This is kind of cool. I had a good chuckle out of this. This is from Australia, where a homeowner in Sydney, Australia. A homeowner, actually, his house is right next to a bar. And he was so fed up with people from the bar using his property as a toilet after a night of drinking that he decided to fight back. People, you know, tie one on and then wander into his side yard and relieve themselves on the side of his house. So he decided to get a little revenge and keep that from happening. Stephen Bodnar is his name. He came up with a booby trap consisting of a sprinkler system and closed-circuit television to chase the would-be whizzers away. The way it works is a motion detector triggers a light, and that is followed immediately by a 3-minute dousing of water from the sprinkler system. It is active between the hours of 6 p.m. and 6 a.m., and apparently a follow-up with local news reporters, Mr. Bodnar's booby trap is working like a charm. And best part is, he has surveillance videos of the shocked victims to prove it. I'd like to see some of those videos. Are they possibly posted online someplace? Because I would like to see those videos. It's got to be entertaining. And finally, in the broken news this morning, this story out of India, where Tapala Nadamuni has just broken a Guinness World Record. He's 23 years old, a college student. He created the world's smallest vacuum cleaner. Created the world's smallest vacuum cleaner out of a ballpoint pen. He added a tiny rotating fan powered with a 4-volt vibration motor in order to provide the suction. At its smallest point, it measures just a quarter of an inch. So it is, you know, not, I don't know how much practical use this has, but it is a Guinness World Record, and it only cost him about $250 to make. Mr. Nadamuni told the Guinness folks all the students in our college were amazed at this tiny vacuum cleaner, and my faculty told me that it is the most beautiful creation they have ever seen. So I'm imagining that his parents are really thrilled, and they can rest easy knowing that all of the money they have spent on their son Tapala's college education has been well spent. All of the money that they have shoveled to the university has been well spent. He now holds a world record for the world's smallest, Guinness record for the world's smallest vacuum cleaner. That is today's Broken News Report, an update on the odd and unusual side of the headlines. And with that, we now return you to your regularly scheduled programming.
Want to stay up to date with what's going on with your favorite high school team? Get real-time score updates throughout the high school sports season with the WFIN scoreboard. It's as simple as bookmarking the WFIN scoreboard page or add it to your mobile homepage for the area's real-time high school scoreboard. Make it easy to follow your team throughout the season from your computer, smartphone, or tablet. Bookmark the WFIN scoreboard page presented by Owens Community College at WFIN.com.
Time now for your daily download, the numbers behind the news and the statistics that shape our lives. The U.S. Surgeon General recently issued a warning that parents these days are experiencing higher and more dire stress levels than ever before. And there are probably a number of reasons for that. Maybe some of the lingering effects of the pandemic when parents were so stressed out over homeschooling and, you know, all of the everything that came along with that. But there are so many reasons why parents are stressed out these days. And part of it is because we are so wrapped up in our kids' lives. According to a new survey of 2,000 working and non-working parents. So they asked both working and non-working parents. The average working parent puts in an 18-hour day when it comes to work and family responsibilities and all of that. An 18-hour day. Non-working parents have a 17-hour day. So the non-working parent picks up a lot of the slack for the working parent. And it's a very long day for them. 56% of all parents feel guilty for not spending enough time with their kids. 56%. And yet, consider this from the survey, the average parent gets just 31 minutes of me time every day. That is not sustainable. That really is not. Just 31 minutes of me time, 18 hours a day on family responsibilities, and more than half, nearly two-thirds of parents still feel guilty about not spending enough time with their kids. So if that describes you, it may very well be time for a reset. Maybe you're overdue for a reset. Something there to think about. Once again, my wife Kyra has joined us in the studio with another collection of recipes from Kyra's kitchen. This morning, another collection of warm and comfy fall recipes.
Yes, yes.
So, yeah.
Soup and sandwiches. It's always good for the
that's
fall.
Kind of the, that's kind of the thing. That's that's the theme. And so I guess we'll start with the easy stovetop chili.
Yes.
What is better this time of year than, you know, a good hearty chili?
Yum.
So it's good stuff.
This is 2 tablespoons of extra virgin olive oil, 1 large yellow onion diced, 3 sticks of celery trimmed and sliced thinly, 4 cloves of garlic minced, 2 pounds of ground beef, 2 tablespoons of chili powder, 2 teaspoons of ground paprika, 1 teaspoon of ground cumin, 1 teaspoon of dried oregano, 1 teaspoon of sea salt, 1/2 teaspoon of ground cinnamon, 28-ounce can of diced tomatoes, a 15-ounce can of red kidney beans drained and rinsed, and 1 cup of broth. So heat your olive oil in a large pot over medium heat. Add the onion, celery, and saute until tender, about 4 to 5 minutes. Then add the garlic and cook until fragrant, about another minute. Add the ground beef and stir, break that up and stir and crumble, and cook that until there's no more pink and mostly brown, about 6 to 7 minutes for that. Then add the chili powder, paprika, cumin, oregano, salt, and cinnamon. Stir in the beef, cook the beef until it's brown all over, another 2 to 3 minutes or so. Then add your cooked tomatoes, your kidney beans, and your broth and stir. Bring the mixture to a simmer. Then reduce the heat to medium-low. Allow the chili to bubble gently, uncovered, for 30 to 45 minutes, strain occasionally. Then let the chili thicken up and serve warm over rice or with your favorite toppings or your crackers or whatever.
Over rice, that's an idea.
I know.
Hadn't really thought about that.
Yeah, I know.
I'm just thinking, as you're cooking this, for a half hour, 45 minutes. Yeah. That's going to smell good.
Yes.
Yeah, that's going to smell good.
Yummy,
and,
yummy.
You know, the other thing with this, and you know, I think we've done chili crock pot recipes and all of that. And I know that's one of your favorite ways to make chili.
Yes.
But it's not like this takes an awful long time.
That's why this is something you can do when you get home from work.
Exactly.
And still have a good, hearty yummy
chili
soup.
Meal.
So,
all in all, doesn't take very long to throw together. And then with that, what's better than grilled cheese?
Yes.
But you have a recipe that takes grilled cheese and amps it up a little bit.
To the
because
next level.
Everything is better with bacon. Bacon and cheddar grilled cheese sandwiches.
Yes. So this is 1 tablespoon of Dijon mustard, 1 tablespoon of mayo, 2 teaspoons of everything but the bagel seasoning, 1 teaspoon of honey, salt to taste, 6 to 8 slices of bacon, 1/2 cup of sharp cheddar cheese shredded, 1/2 cup of mozzarella cheese shredded, and salted butter. So preheat your oven to 375 degrees. Cook your bacon on a baking sheet for 15 to 20 minutes until gold brown and crisp. Then increase your oven temperature to 400 degrees. In a small bowl, mix your Dijon mustard, your mayo, everything but the bagel seasoning, honey, and salt, and stir all that together. And the salt is to your taste. So however you prefer that. If you don't want salt, don't add salt. That's fine also.
You know, that's really going to have... It's going to have quite the flavor.
With the Dijon. So add about 1 tablespoon of the Dijon mixture to 2 slices of sourdough bread. Sprinkle cheddar and mozzarella cheese on top. Add as much or as little desired. Place three to four slices of bacon on top of the cheese. Put the other top on and kind of push that down. Add it to a oven safe skillet or fry pan. I use iron skillet for my grilled cheese. Add 1 tablespoon of butter or on top of the bread and place 1 tablespoon of butter in the pan. Bake in the oven for 8 to 10 minutes or until the cheese is visibly melted. Flip until both sides are golden brown. Remove from the oven and enjoy.
That's good stuff.
Yes.
Zing. It's going to add some zing to it. That's the word that I was looking for with that mixture there with the Dijon and all of that other stuff. And then we have a recipe for dessert, and these are incredibly yummy. You made these the other day.
Yes, I made these for our son's wedding. So we're going to be enjoying a bunch of them then.
Yeah, and I had an early sample because I had to test it.
Yes,
I had to test them. Make sure that they're good. And they are. It is a salted pumpkin brown butter cookie.
Yes. So this one is 1 cup, so 2 sticks of salted butter. And you want salted butter.
Okay.
2/3 cup of unsweetened pumpkin puree, 1 cup of granulated sugar divided, 1/2 cup of light brown sugar, 2 teaspoons of vanilla extract, 2 egg yolks, 2 teaspoons of molasses, 1 teaspoon of baking soda, 1 teaspoon of baking powder, 1 teaspoon of pumpkin spice. If you don't have pumpkin spice, a teaspoon of cinnamon is fine. 1 3/4 cup of all-purpose flour, 2 teaspoons of cinnamon, and a pinch of salt, about 1/4 teaspoon. Put the butter in a saucepan over medium heat and allow it to fully melt. Once it has melted, let it continue to simmer until you have a nutty smell, and it looks golden brown. And it has quite a, because it'll like bubble up for a while and it'll get kind of foamy and then it'll quiet down. So it takes about 4 to 5 additional minutes, and it'll transfer, the butter will transfer to a brown stage, and then you're going to add it to a large mixing bowl and pop it in the fridge just until the butter is cool. Not solid, but it's going to be whipped.
Okay.
It's going to be like a whipped. So when you take it out, you mix it up and it'll be kind of a just a creamy.
Okay.
So wipe and rinse out the pan. Add the pumpkin to the same pan and let it cool gently, drain it out, enabling the water to evaporate from the pumpkin puree. Stir occasionally. Cook the pumpkin until it's close to resembles a dry paste more than a wet puree, about 6 to 8 minutes. Meanwhile, preheat your oven to 350 degrees. Line 2 large baking sheets with parchment paper. When the brown butter is cooled but not solid, add 1/2 cup of brown sugar, 1/2 cup of granulated sugar, your vanilla, egg yolk, and molasses. Whisk all that together until it's combined. Add the pumpkins and whisk that into until it's combined. Then add your baking soda, your baking powder, your pumpkin pie spice, and your flour all to the wet ingredients using a spoon. Don't use a mixer. Use a spoon for this.
Okay.
You just want it to be the right consistency, and putting it in an electric mixer, just, it's not, you don't want that. So
okay,
just with your wood spoon, combine the remaining 1/2 cup of granulated sugar and the cinnamon, just enough, and then add just a little bit of salt to that. And stir that to combine. Then you're going to roll your balls, your cookie dough balls, and then you're going to roll that into the cinnamon, sugar, and salt mixture that you just made. Place them 2 inches apart on a baking sheet and bake for about 12 to 13 minutes or until golden brown. And then let them cool and store in an airtight container. Enjoy.
Best is to get them so that they're brown kind of on the outside,
right,
still kind of gooey on the inside.
Yes. Mm. Yes. I go closer to the 10 minutes than the 12.
Excuse me. Very similar to snickerdoodle cookies, but with the pumpkin spice.
Yes.
Kind of added the salted pumpkin brown butter cookies,
yes,
along with the easy stovetop chili and the bacon and cheddar grilled cheese.
Yes.
Now that is a collection of warm and comfy fall
yummy
recipes, to be sure.
Yes.
Good stuff there. We've got those recipes posted on the Kyra's Kitchen Facebook page, at Kyra's Kitchen WFIN on Facebook, of course, and also linked up at our webpage at goodmornings.net. My wife, Kyra, thanks very much.
You're welcome.
And that will finish up our podcast for today. I want to thank all of our guests for joining us on the program this morning. Once again, remember, you can get more information about all of the topics that we talk about each and every day on the show at our webpage. That, of course, goodmornings.net. So check us out online. Coming up Monday on the program, Washington dysfunction leaves agriculture in limbo. A new farm bill was due last year, but now it may not be done until next year. We'll talk about the concerns over kicking this critical can down the road even further. So until Monday morning, that is Good Mornings for this morning. Now that you've had a good morning, go on out and make it a good day, a great weekend. We'll catch you back here next week.